This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. Good to have you with us today. Matt Brett Stein in his usual spot. Jack Rice is going to join us because we've got about a bevy of legal things that broke on the last 24 hours.
Who's this Brett Stein that's coming up?
Did I say Brett Stein or Jeff Stein?
No, you just lack of spacing there. Just giving you a hard time on that.
It's on brand for me. What's his name? It's on the other side of the glass. I've spoken to him the last 3 years. Good to see you. Happy holidays.
Indeed.
How are you today, Brett?
I'm bummed that Larry Elder is not the governor of California.
Why are you bummed about that?
No, I'm not bummed at all. I'm just shocked that actually he lost by, what, like 20 points of the recall
effort?
Well, okay,
you got to be careful how you say it.
Yeah.
Because really the first question is, does Newsom deserve to stay at his job?
Right.
I mean, it has really nothing else to do with anyone else. I mean, granted, all Elder or anyone else that was voting for anyone else in that race was clearly voting against him. But there's a lot of people that when you factor in that first question, you really was kind of one of those things is, do you approve of his job? And what, 65%? Was that?
It's well into the 60s. Yeah,
65. I thought was the last number.
Which was even beating the polls. So that showed, I think, like only 43.
Yeah, well, I think there was one poll that came on that said 70, that he was tracking at 70. But, you know, and it was interesting. I was reading a little bit about him. In August, he kind of put out the narrative, this is close. This is going to change. And that kind of lit the fire under the California Democrats. And it seems to have, you know, really kind of got them motivated, and they took care of business there. A lot to get to there, because there's some wonkish election stuff there, which I found to be very interesting. That I don't know if it's a precursor of what we're about to see, but it is odd stuff that he won under that with that much of a majority. And I'll get to that here in a little bit. Brett, how fast are you driving nowadays?
Well, I hope there's no troopers listening as I answer that question.
Okay, let's just cut the crap. We all are driving fast. We had a year where all of a sudden the pandemic took most of the vehicles off the road. You and I were still coming into the studio back even when everything was shut down. You and I were one of the people that had those passes that could get on the highways and just go. That was about April of last year. So you and I mean, I was going out there and there was no cars. I mean, it was the afternoon drive and there was not a dang car on 169 or 212.
Yeah, I don't think for about that year period of spring 20 to spring 21, I don't think I ran into one traffic jam that entire year.
Well, and we all were out driving and we all of a sudden started falling in love with this. Like, wow, I can open it up a little bit. We all drive faster. Now, are we all drag racing like those idiots I hear out on 169 at night? You know, even though I don't really live right next to 169, I can hear them out drag racing out there. No. I mean, these street racers and people like that, they're just idiots. And, you know, they want to go out and do that. I mean, yeah, this is why I have zero sympathy for you when you hit someone and you kill them and you act like it was an accident. No, it wasn't. You were driving real fast and you did that. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about we all do go drive. If it was 60, we're all driving 65. If you drove 65, you're driving 70. If you're going down secondary roads, I mean, gosh, people fly through our residential neighborhood now. People don't really stop for stop signs. They don't really, you know, they're kind of are, you know, blasting through things. There really is kind of this old mentality. We all are driving faster, and we all are. I mean, we all are a lot more aggressive and more aggressive on the roadways because we were driving on roads that we didn't have to worry about anyone else out there. There is in the new world of aggressive driving, there is something in this Mad Max world we live in now. There is something I have noticed. It has happened now multiple times, so I'm going to take this as a trend. See if this has happened to you. So you're coming to an intersection that's regulated by stop signs. It could be two stop signs, three stop signs, four stop signs, no matter what. You're coming to an intersection that's a stop sign regulated road, all stop signs in all directions. You are heading, say, southbound on the road. Someone's heading northbound on the road. reminder, you get whoever gets to the stop intersection first, you have the right of way because you were there first and you can go. That's how regulated, you know, a stop sign regulated intersection works. It's clear your car is going to get to that stop sign way before the other vehicle is going to get there. All right? It's clear you are going to have the right of way. So the guy that's driving towards you does what I call the short stop now. So they could be, you know, they're a half a block away from the intersection. They realize they are not going to get there in time to just kind of rolling stop through the intersection. So 20 to 30 feet before, or 30, you know, 20 to 30 yards before the stop sign, they're slamming their brakes on. They're not even close to the intersection. And they slam their brakes on and then try to gun it through the intersection saying, I got there first. Like the intersection is now extended halfway down the block towards them because God forbid, they wait the 2 seconds for you to have to turn the left turn in that intersection. I can't tell you how many times I've started to see that. That it's comical. I had one guy almost broadside me. And of course he was like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I came to the intersection and I stopped and no one else was there. And you basically felt as if this was some sort of drag strip. So no, I'm in the right of way. Have you had that happen to you?
Not that I've really noticed, at least at those stop signs, but I wonder if I've been guilty of that before where I see that stop sign coming up and I think, I don't want to stop all the way. I just want to do the rolling stop. So,
well, I'm noticing we're having less of the people that ride their brakes up to a green light, which has always annoyed me.
Oh, you know, I hate that. Yes.
Why are you braking? It's green. Move your butt.
I'm anticipating the light change.
And, of course, what happens when the light does change? Do they, thank God I was slowing down. I'll just stop now safely. Nope. All of a sudden, Mario frickin' Andretti, and they're up on their side wheels getting through that intersection. If they would have just not pushed the brakes while they're going through, we'd all gotten through. That is amazing to me because that is just someone who is so determined that I am not going to lose this race that I am the only one that knows we're all running in, that I'm going to just completely and surely change the rules of the road just so I can get through that intersection. It is magnificent. You are that is just a self-centered display of self-privilege that you generally just don't see too often. He's going to turn ahead of me. I'll stop right now. I'll go. And they don't ever stop. They just slow down a little bit. And then they gun it. And just thank you for that. Drive safe, everyone. That's why, I mean, by the way, if you want to know the truth, I mean, as much as the media in this state likes to focus on the crime that's been going on in Minneapolis, I've been mentioning now the amount of car crashes and car crashes tragically where people are dying in the state has got to be way up. I mean, because there's like almost daily now, almost every single day there's a car accident somewhere in the state where someone's dying. You know, the speed was a factor. You know, sometimes it's drinking and driving. But needless to say, I think that there is a lot more accidents on the highways right now than there ever have been.
Has anyone released any numbers on that from the Department of Transportation?
MnDOT or anything? I don't know. I would. You know, I've never seen anything like this. You see this consistency of the accidents where they bring them up and how many that they're having, but every day it seems like there's someone dying or someone been taken to a hospital because of a car accident somewhere in the state.
It's got to be way up from 2020 just because of the pandemic, but probably also because, you said, people are used to driving on the open roads and aren't quite used to traffic.
Well, yeah, and how people. It's got to be way above average. If we had one a day, 365 people dying on the roadways in the state of Minnesota in a given year, I can't believe that would be normal in any capacity. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, we have Jeff Stein joining us coming up here at the bottom of the hour. And then we also have Jack Rice. Like I said, a litany of legal decisions have come down. 520, we're shooting to talk to Jack this afternoon. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. First of all, Wednesday's numbers. COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,736 new cases, 41 newly reported deaths. Now, I will say this. One of the things that's happening now is that they're realizing more people died of COVID than initially said. And so as they review some of these cases and they do some testing, they're coming back and adding to the COVID death count, unfortunately. Not only all 41, only 12 were reported this month. The rest of them of the 29 others happened as far back as June of 2020. So still 12. Yeah, I don't ever want to become so numb to this that 12 people dying in a single day is somehow an acceptable number. It just is not. The state's total death toll, 7,956 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 13th, the state reported that 3,362,569 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,179,113 people have completed their vaccine series. 51.7% of Minnesotans' total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccine series. Jumps to 67.6% when it's excluding kids under the age of 12. It's the 21st best state. New York Times, we are the 21st best state. 75.7% of the state, 18 and older, has at least one dose in us. 69% is fully vaccinated, 18 plus. Through September 14th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 718. That's down from 748 reported on Tuesday, which is good news. Still, though, of those hospitalized, 208 people are in intensive care. 510 were in general hospital care. Even with the drop of 30 non-ICU cases from Tuesday's report, it is still on par with the peak of spring last year, which maxed out at 202 patients. So we are actually above that number right now in the fall in intensive care. 517 were slightly below that in general hospital care, but once again, we were well above it yesterday. The 2,736 positive results on Wednesday were from 34,371 completed tests. That's a test positivity rate of 7.96%. God, I hope that's not schools. God, I hope that's not schools. That's according to John Hopkins. Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 7.36. I have a very bad, considering that's Monday, I have a very bad feeling that involves a lot of kids that are going to schools. I have a very bad feeling. It doesn't break it down per se in the story, but I would not be surprised by that. Tell you what, let's get Gary on in here. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Gary is in Minneapolis. Welcome in, Gary.
Hi, Matt. I'm very glad you brought the driving. I mean, where are the cops now when these guys in town here on Park Avenue, 3-4 times I see it. I know how fast they're going. They're going real fast, and they weave around the cars one lane to the other, passing everybody. It's just terrible. I wish there was somebody watching that. And then, it just, our feelings and means together are completely broken down. I remember Reagan, hooray for me attitude, the heck with the other guy. And that's what people are. Society is just everybody for themselves more now.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate that on a positive note there. We're all doomed. Good luck.
Positive affirmation to Gary in Minneapolis.
Gary, I hope you have a good day, my friend. I hope you're having a good day. Okay, here's what I'll say about the driving. It's very difficult. And this is, as I know, there's a lot of people that would just like to focus on when this happens in Minneapolis. But the reality is this speeding and this street racing and stuff like that is going on everywhere. Wasn't that tragic case, the two people down and that were up visiting from Iowa? Remember that down in Burnsville? They're on Burnsville Parkway, and they got some guy that was street racing them on the Burnsville Parkway, and he hit the car and killed them both. Ugh. It's happening everywhere. It's happening in all parts of the state, too. And whereas, I'm going to be honest with you, whether that's state patrol, whether that's county sheriff, whether that's your local jurisdiction police officer, it's very hard when you have one individual driving at an insane rate of speed and you just out of nowhere. You try that, and to give them credit, give all the officers credit, they try to stay with those people, but they have determined through, unfortunately, trial and error, and you think about that, it's unfortunately trial and error, that to do continue in a high-speed chase, you're only going to end up with either those drivers killed or a lot of other people killed. So what they do is they pull back, and hopefully the individual in the car, without them knowing that they have anyone who's driving behind them anymore, they might slow down themselves. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. They get the license plate number, they get the car, they can try to track the person down. A lot of times, unfortunately, it might be a carjacked vehicle. I'm more than willing to give the law enforcement a break on that situation. The one that bugs me a lot is when it seems like it's some sort of coordinated driving party where all of a sudden there's 40 cars, some of them pulled over on the shoulders, drag racing in the middle of 169, and you know, like this is some sort of Facebook coordinated event. And I'm like, really? You guys, you know, it's you know, you can't jump off on the previous exit and the next exit and drop down some, you know, strip sticks and, you know, rip their tires out and they try to come by and get all these people. I just don't quite understand how it is that because that seems to be a little bit more, like I said, coordinated. And I'm like, okay, that should not be happening. And that's, you know, you are going to get people killed. And I was actually out on 394. I was on 394. I was coming home one night. It was probably about 10:30. And I was coming home one night, and all of a sudden there was a group of people that were clearly about 20 cars, and they were taking turns. They were all going slow, and there was a line of cars that was keeping everyone back, and then cars were running up and, you know, and drag racing each other on 394. And it's like, okay, how in the world is this happening? And not, I mean, how many jurisdictions are we going through? How many county sheriffs, state patrol? I mean, for goodness sakes, we're right by the state patrols up in Duluth and on 100. How is this happening? So that's the one that kind of gets me a little bit. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More on the Minnesota Coronavirus Update and Jeff Stein when we do come back at the bottom of the hour. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. More on the Minnesota Coronavirus Update. Carl Anthony Towns from the T-Wolves, whose mother and six other family members have died from COVID-19. Sweet Lord. All our prayers to your family on that one for sure. He's expressed continued incredulity about the objections to the COVID vaccine that has been proven to save lives. It never matters to people until it happens to them. I hope no one has to deal with what I had to deal with and still am dealing with, the Timberwolves star wrote on Tuesday in response to The Athletic's John Krasinski, who saw vile comments in response to Tom's tweet about people making excuses about the vaccine. Every day I see a new excuse why people aren't getting the vaccine. You're starting to get creative with these reasons, though, and it's actually really funny, the tweet reads. I mean, that is the craziest part. The Republican Party, and this is where it comes from. By the way, take a look at the map of the places that voted for Gavin Newsom compared to where the current COVID hotspots in California are, and it matches up perfectly with each other. The Republican areas are where all the hotspots are. It is unbelievable. Did you see that one that was up on Twitter today?
No, I'm not shocked whatsoever that's the case.
Your party used to be the party of, we care about others. We got Christian values. Now it's like, I don't care if your grandma died. You're a liar. Maybe grandma was a crisis actor. You know, your grandma wouldn't have died if she took horse dewormer. Yeah. And bleach.
It's like that Tennessee school board meeting where they had that kid testifying about how I think he had his grandmother die of COVID and the audience was laughing at him.
They were mocking him.
Yeah.
And it just is, what happened to you as a party? And I can tell you what happened to you. You know, what Trump really did is expose who you guys really are. And that's really what it is. He exposed who you really are. You're not Christian. You're vile people that basically want to sit there and watch your enemy suffer. Oh, get him! Get him! And that's who you are. And so you see a kid who's testifying about mask mandates being a good thing because his grandmother died, and you're like, oh, he's mock grandma dying. Ha, 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 ha. And then all of a sudden someone shows them this, and they're like, well, that's not who I am inside. Bull crap. That's exactly who you are on the inside. That is exactly – this is exposing exactly who you people are, like that woman in Connecticut who's out there assaulting the Navy guy at the pizza stop. You can sit there all day long and say, well, that's not who I am. Of course it's who you are. That's what Trump did. Is he allowed your real id to come to light, and you guys are loving it. It's bitter and angry and disturbing, mildly racist and really racist in some of you. But that's what you guys are. You guys are, the only thing that matters to you is owning the libs. And there is not a thing on this planet, your own health, your well-being, your job, your money, your kids, your religion. There is not a single damn thing that matters more to you than owning the libs. And so, and Trump told you that's what you should be. And so you embraced it. You know, how anyone can look at Carl Anthony Towns and not say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. This is a tragic loss. Instead, mocking him. Just what's wrong with you people? And in the reality is people like, Matt, it's harsh. You got to start treating these people with the harsh language they deserve. You're pathetic. You're pathetic. And until you guys wake up and realize, holy God, what have I become? I am not going to back down. Just not going to. Minneapolis Public Schools employees and must either get vaccinated against COVID-19 or be tested regularly under a mandate and unanimously approved by the school board on Tuesday night. The policy will take effect on October 15th, extends to contractors and volunteers who work directly with students. It comes in response to a surge of COVID-19 cases caused by the highly contagious Delta variant. These conversations around vaccines have been happening across the nation, Minneapolis Superintendent Ed Graff said. The commonality across all the districts includes Minneapolis Public Schools is the belief that the high vaccination rate among our staff is critical to keeping our schools open for in-person instructions and protecting our students. It is. St. Paul School Board approved a similar vaccine mandate earlier this month. Minneapolis school board members offered an amendment Tuesday that also required students in the district to be vaccinated. I think it's the right thing to do. I'm just worried that my own kids are going to school. The board voted against the amendment, citing the logistical challenges of tracking all these students' vaccination status and the fact that COVID-19 vaccines are not yet approved for all kids. Minneapolis school board members also heard a plan on how the district will spend the federal COVID-19 relief funds. Much of the funding will be used to address the learning shortfalls of the students who fell behind during the pandemic. Bravo. And good for you. That's a problem, folks. Trust me. And that's not just Minneapolis. Every school district. There was a lag that happened last year. I commend you for basically getting that money out there and trying to help out that area there. So Minneapolis starting October 15th, you work there, you're going to have to be vaccinated. And that's a good sign. That's a good sign if you ask me. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Oh, is Jeff ready? He's ready to go? All right.
He's ready to go.
Let's take a break. Come on back. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He's also a noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, as well as totallyiowa.com. And, of course, the Iowa Business Report, daily show he does down there. Excellent. The Iowa Politics Report as well. He's kind enough to join us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hey, Jeff.
Matthew, I just so love that music. That's my walk-up music.
That is.
I want that played before I go into any room.
I'm surprised. Do you have that at your station now?
Yes, I absolutely do. You sent it to me, or rather, you had your people send it to me. You can't be bothered with such pedestrian tasks,
well,
but you had your people send it to you.
Oh, yeah, because that's me. You know, let me ask you, do the Iowans think you're pretentious when you play that on your show?
They already know what an arrogant, pretentious sort I am. I mean, the music isn't going to change anybody's opinion one way or another. I mean, that dog hunted long ago.
Oh, of course Jeff is playing that music. That's really what the response is.
They've rolled their eyes so much over the course of time, nothing surprises them. So, you know.
Let's get into it. How surprised were you at the margin here? I mean, this is the last update from the New York Times, 64%. And reminder, we got to make sure we phrase this correctly. The first question was, should Gavin Newsom be removed as the governor of California? Basically, a job approval question. 64% said no, that he should stay as governor. 36% said yes, he should be removed, with 77% of districts in right now. And really, at that point, anything after that becomes moot. So, you know, were you surprised at the margin on that?
Not ultimately, and it's because of the strategy that he wound up employing, okay? And this was a very savvy political move by Gavin Newsom, not his first day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the voter registration numbers in California, 46% of registered voters are Democrats. 24% are Republicans, 23% do not have a party affiliation. So what that means is, you have to get all the registered Republicans and all the registered non-affiliated voters together as a single block to just barely have more of a voting pool than there are Democrats. All right? That means there's 5 million more registered Democrats than Republicans. So the deck, in essence, lays out that way going into it. But if you remember when this whole thing started, they did not have a problem getting enough signatures to have this question brought to the ballot because Newsom's job approval rating in polls was very low. And because, Matt, and this to me is the fundamental point, if the question is simply, should you get rid of Gavin Newsom, if that's all that people focused on and not the other half of it, I think you would have had a much closer vote, maybe even 55% to 45%. But this is where, and he'd still stay in office, but it'd be much, much closer. This is where, in the abstract, you say, should we get rid of this guy? Yeah, he's a putz. He goes to dinner without a mask. Get rid of him. But then when you get to brass tacks of, okay, now that you've gotten rid.
Do we lose him?
Yeah, let's see if we can get him back.
Oh, okay. That's not good. So hopefully we get him back here pretty quick. Because I think Jeff's point is what he was getting at is that because the other candidates there were not as strong on what the replacement candidate would be, question number two, that helped Newsom quite a bit because quite literally that, you know, 64% were saying, you know, I might not like Gavin Newsom, but at the same time, I'd rather have him than the other guys. Jeff, we have him back yet? Yep, good.
I think he might have missed just what you said at the end there.
Well, Jeff.
I never left. You got to stop going to Radio Shack closeout sales for your equipment.
Sure thing, Iowa Radio. I've been in your radio stations 3 times. Okay, bubblegum and prayers. All right.
Okay, I'll go back to the point where you started cutting in because you couldn't hear me anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Once you had an actual opponent. So, for example, Larry Elder all of a sudden became the leading non-Newsom. It would have been the same if it was Caitlyn Jenner. It would have been the same if it was the guy who used to be mayor of San Diego. Once you actually get an opponent, then you have people who say, oh, yeah, let's get rid of Newsom. Oh, wait, we get him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, now I'm changing my mind. If Larry Elder had run a California race, he might have done better. But he made it a national race. He was on every national talk show. He then said, you know, if Dianne Feinstein leaves office, I'm going to appoint a Republican to replace her. Oh, goodness sakes. All you've done is just hand Gavin Newsom what he needs. And so it then became Gavin Newsom not running on his record, but instead saying, you want a Donald Trump wannabe running our state?
Well, and you bring up Trump. I mean, he really – it was kind of – he did fall into that trap. Schwarzenegger, when he ran against – to fill in for Gray, you know, he did a really good job of staying away from that national level. And he – you know, and because similar to a point when Al Franken was running here – for the first time for his Senate seat, he said, I'm going to break the mold. I am concerned about this state. And Schwarzenegger was able to basically win that because he did exactly do that. I think this idea, and Elder, whether or not he willingly played into that or he was just a dupe, the fact is too many people tried to turn this into a referendum for Trump, and that was just not going to fly, especially in a state like California.
Here's some numbers that make your point. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a 50% favorability rating back in 2003 when he won. Larry Elder's favorability rating was 34%. Okay, so you have Arnold, who's just kind of his own island, with a 50% favorable rating. You then have Larry Elder, who starts talking about all these national things with a much lower favorability rating. So no, not a surprise. Once the race became Newsom versus someone else, you can't have a recall election where you throw somebody out of office one day and then a month later have an election to replace them. That just doesn't work. But I think if you would have had a separation, you might have had a little different issue. I still think, given the voter registration levels, all you have to do, you know, is just kind of swing the rope in the air and say, okay, Democrats, come on around. And with that voter registration advantage, you know, when's the next time a Republican's going to win in that state?
The Republicans, one of the paths that they have, and this is on a national level, they have definitely targeted Latino voters to try mm-hmm. to get them into their base. And they have had some success with that, especially in the realm of appealing to religious Latino voters through specifically a lot of the Catholic faith. And they've actually been able to bring some Latino voters in. But yes, when you're looking at the numbers, New York Times also have brought out the point that the Latino voters definitely went with Gavin Newsom or to keep Gavin Newsom in office, which was, once again, this is kind of this trend. They're hoping – Republicans keep hoping that they can finally figure out some way to get Latino voters firmly into their camp, because that would be a counter base, which they think, to the Democrats, especially in future elections as the demographics of this country changes. But the reality is that they still have yet to figure out a way to seal the deal with Latino voters.
I've got some numbers on exit polls. It shows that 58% of Hispanics, as a voting bloc, 58% voted to retain Newsom. The projection had been it would be 68%. And so the thinnest little layer of silver lining that Republicans have is to say, well, you know, Gavin Newsom did not dominate Hispanics to the level that had been anticipated. So that means, you know, hey, good on us. Well, when you consider the fact that 64% of the citizens who voted to keep him, and that voting bloc was only at 58, that's statistically insignificant when you're talking about a state of that many people. So, yeah, the Republicans have been putting the strategy there. Yes, it seems to have paid off better than had been projected. But still, when you're only getting 42% of a voting bloc that's that large, where's the path to victory with that?
I got into it once with the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Gazelka. For some reason, he decided to comment on one of my Facebook posts, and he came back and he said, oh, we're doing so much better with Latino voters. I went and looked at the numbers. You're at 60-40. And granted, yes, that is dramatically up from when it was 80-20. But you still have a little bit of a math problem there before you can claim them as a solid, a dependable voting bloc for Republicans. And I think that, they have made inroads. But the reality is that they've, you know, whether that's the border wall stuff, whether it is it's the way immigrants are treated in this country, you've seen them go after farm workers in this country. you know, they have the Republicans' problem is that they've got a real bipolar message when it comes to Latino voters, Hispanic voters. And I think that, yes, they definitely have brought those numbers up. But I don't know how much further they really can take them, because the reality is unless they can dramatically change their party's platform, and I mean dramatically change it, I don't think that they're going to get any much better than this.
Well, and that's an excellent point. And the reason why the Republicans have been able to make some inroads is in large part because many Democrats have taken that voting bloc for granted. So it is incumbent upon Democrats. I mean, if you're looking at these numbers and you say, well, we got 58% of Hispanics, that's great. It's only 58% based on the historic numbers. So what are Democrats not doing to get their message across to that voting bloc? Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned something about favorability ratings, and we all know that the latest AM950 poll shows that Matt McNeil has 100% favorability. But again, that's on an island over here.
Even my mom doesn't like me. So
she doesn't listen, and therefore she doesn't vote. So
that's right. That's good.
But here's the number that showed you everything you needed to know. We talked about Schwarzenegger's favorability as opposed to Elder's, and there was a big difference.
Yeah.
Newsom's approval rating overall, Matt, was 55% going in. 55. Gray Davis's was 26.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, I was a little put out last night in hearing Newsom's victory remarks. Yes, he outperformed his approval rating. Yes, he stayed in office. But he then started to talk about why it was a referendum on every good thing that he had done. He's the one, properly, in the month before the election, made it all about Larry Elder being a bad person. He wasn't running on his record, and so I think he needs to be a little careful. I get it. I get the spirit of the moment. Yeah. I get the fact that he wants to build momentum because he's got to run for re-election now in 14 months. But to, in essence, come in and say, hey, look, I was retained. That means you love what I'm doing. That's sort of like a guy being born on third base and saying, oh, look at me. I hit a triple.
Well, and he was, I mean, he went after, you know, he scared a lot of California Democrats in early August when he was out there saying that this race is a dead heat at this point. And mm-hmm. I think that that was kind of part of his messaging. But once again, just you're a smart political guy. Do you try to recall a person whose favorability rating is 55%? Because that should just tell you right now that unless you've got a real stellar candidate that can pull away 5% of that vote, which they did not have anywhere on that ballot, it almost baffles the mind that even 51% would be a pretty hard hurdle to cross, but 55, you're like, that was just a dumb idea.
Well, now that's 55% approval in exit polls yesterday.
Okay.
It was lower when they really started to gin this up. But here's again why, yeah, Gavin wins. That's great for him. He had a 55% approval rating in the exit polls, but 64% voted for him. In other words, you've got 9% of people who voted for him don't approve of him. Okay, so there's a gap here.
Well, or approved
that
of him.
Needs to address.
Well, they approved of him when compared to everyone else.
Well, they approved of him not being thrown out of office at 64%. But do you approve of the job he's doing? There were people who went in, voted to retain him while they held their noses because he was a Democrat, because they didn't like any of the other options. The other thing that's very smart that the Democrats did. Who was the leading Democrat who was on the ballot in part two? In other words, if part one was get rid of Gavin, who was the leading Democrat in part two?
I saw the name.
There will be silence because it's nobody ever heard of.
Yeah,
right?
It was some real fringe guy.
Exactly. And so instead of some Democrat saying, this is my chance, I'm going to run, and then that way, if Gavin loses, well, here I am. They basically just said it's up or down on the single Democrat. And again, these numbers bear out that if you're a Democrat in California, you voted for Gavin even if you didn't like him because you did not want a Republican.
And it was a YouTuber, if I remember correctly. It was the top Democrat. It was some YouTuber guy. Okay, so one thing I went and looked at numbers-wise, a little wonkish here, okay?
Yes.
So a year a president is inaugurated, the party is in power. Yes, if there are special elections, generally to fill a cabinet member seat or something like that, generally in early part of the year, that usually it's pretty common for the party of the incoming president that year to win those races. But it is – now, granted, we're talking California, which is a different playing field on a lot of levels. But when you get to fall of a first year of a president, usually the smell is off the rose. And I could not – I mean, I could find Democrat wins, but I could not find or you know, the party where the that matched the president's party that had just come into power, I have found wins for those in fall. I cannot find one that this was this overwhelming. And once again, we talked about this. Larry Elder tried to make it a national race. A lot of people will try to say this is a way for you to get – you know, to come back and help out Trump. And the fact is that was a overwhelming loss. Your thoughts on just that trend, because that goes against a lot of things right now.
I go back to your earlier statement. This is California, and I don't think we should make much of it, even within California. There are a lot of Republicans today, including Larry Elder, who say, oh, we'll get them next time because we only lost by, you know, half, figuring that 2022 is going to be a great midterm election for Republicans. I don't think on a statewide level in California. So I think it I caution against anyone taking the California results, given these particular numbers, and trying to make more out of it other than Gavin Newsom, as a smart politician, made it not about his record in a recall election. He made it about the opposition.
Well, and yeah, it's Elder did not help his cause, and he, you know, he yeah, that was a major part. I mean, and I think that has to be factored in. This victory here, a lot of it was because really, when you did look at it with both questions, the other option was just a no-go for a lot of people. So we'll take a break. When we come on back, how about the redemption of Dan Quayle? How about that name showing back up again? Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. Woodward's latest book is going to be coming on out here about Trump in the last days. One of the more interesting passages, and once again, if you take it as legit or not, I mean, obviously, I've always said if he's not telling the truth, he's opened himself up for lawsuits. But yet, funny, I don't see lawsuits getting fired in a lot of these cases. What you do get is Pence, who clearly was being pressured by Trump to indeed write new constitutional law, overturn the election results, and throw them out on January 6th and place Trump in power. And Pence, who clearly was not for this, and he was trying to find some way out of this, contacted former Vice President Dan Quayle. And Quayle, to his credit, said, no, 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 you can't do that. You've got to stay with what the Constitution says. You don't really have any say in this at all. You're basically just a mouthpiece there. And so it's interesting to see Dan Quayle, who I think most of it is forgotten about, come back and finding out that he actually played a very important role, I think, with Pence in what his trajectory was on January 6th.
Isn't it interesting that with all the other stuff in the Woodward book, this is getting forgotten? In most books that would come out, this would be front and center, but all the other stuff about, you know, generals calling China to say, don't worry, we'll make sure he doesn't bomb you. You know, I mean, that changes everything. But obviously, Pence being an Indiana politician about 12 years younger than Quayle, so they had that ongoing relationship. But when you've got, and I don't mean this any more disrespectfully than it's going to sound, when you're asking Dan Quayle for advice, oh, goodness, aren't we in a situation? But as you know, the quote that we see from Quayle is, you have no flexibility on this. None. Zero. Forget it. Put it away.
Yes.
I mean, you could not be clearer or not. And I think Trump has admitted he was pressuring Pence at every turn. Something else that's in the Woodward and Costa book where Trump says to Pence, I'm not going to be your friend anymore if you don't do this. Are we 13-year-old girls at this point?
Well, apparently they were. And this was, I mean, come on, there's a level of coordination here, which is just bizarre. I will say, and also should be mentioned, well, Cheney's gone. He passed away. But I got to imagine if Pence had gone talk to Cheney, I got to imagine Cheney himself as well would have said, no, you can't do that. I don't think Cheney, if you look at Liz Cheney, I don't think that her father was that far away from it. And I don't think he would have wanted any part of what Trump was up to.
Dick Cheney's still with us, by the way.
Oh, yes.
But you're right. And the reason why the Pence part is important is because he's the last Republican vice president who had to preside over certification of his own defeat. And so there was a direct parallel there. Much worse situation, obviously, was poor Al Gore, because he was the one that was the top on the ballot.
No,
and had to certify.
Al Gore is gone now, too. So is all these people, right? I'm just talking to – they're all dead now, right?
Are you a QAnon conspiracy theorist with all these people are dead? Is that where we're going with this?
I think I was thinking of HW. Because I can tell you right now, it is interesting. I've thought about the fact that he went back to Dan Quayle. And the reality is that isn't – what I think about that span, when you go back that far, is that how much that Republican Party has changed in that 30 years.
Well, and the thing is, Dan Quayle had a very distinguished career until he learned how to spell. And until he tried to take on Lloyd Benson in a debate.
No, that's when he got into trouble. But when he took on Benson and he got clobbered.
Unfortunately, there are certain incidents that you just can't crawl out of the hole, and that was one of them.
Well, unless you said Dick Cheney's gone. So there you go. Jeff Stein.
He's on vacation. He's gone. He's out of town.
He's in Wyoming. That's all gone. Spotlight this. We'll put the Iowa Politics Report up. Hour two is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I swear to God, I thought for a second there Cheney was gone. I mean, when was the last really alive?
I mean,
Brett,
if you think about it in one sense, yeah.
He's Age of Ultron over there. He's been rebuilt by metal hands for many years, hasn't he? The cold heart of Dick Cheney.
You brought up a good point, though. Even Cheney would have been against those insurrection attempts, which if you told anyone that in 2007, 2008, that Dick Cheney would be on the side of democracy, my God.
Well, I just saw a picture of Quayle, who is basically our oldest living vice president now, Mondale passing away recently. You know, I'm wondering if that's kind of where I got with H.W. Bush and Mondale passing. As Mondale is the vice president, H.W. Bush passing. That's why I think I screwed that up. Anyway, oops. I don't do it that often. It's time for a Matt Oops File. Yes, Dick Cheney is still alive. You're welcome. But Quayle is 70, only 74.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, God willing, he lives nice, you know, 20 more years. He could be around for another 20 years, easy.
Wait, he's younger than Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
Is he? Well, yeah,
that's
but
nuts.
Not even close. Not even really close on either one of them, is it? I think, what, 76 on Trump?
Trump, I think, is 76. Biden's either 78 or 79 now, I think.
Oh, 78, I believe. Wow. Yeah, no. And if you haven't seen that quote, that's actually a pretty impressive quote. The fact that he was like, no. You can't do this. But it does show you, and I think maybe by skipping over Cheney, because once you go back, it's like, because, you know, before Trump, before Pence, if you go past Cheney, the last vice president you had was Dan Quayle. And even Dan Quayle, who was kind of a laughingstock, well, not kind of, he was a laughingstock during the H.W. Bush administration. And he really never got traction, and he never had a chance in 96. When he ran on his own against you try to get the Republican nomination.
God, I don't even – did he actually run in 96?
I believe he did. It was like bleep and gone.
No kidding.
No one wanted him. It was back in the – because remember, 92 to a point was Ross Perot. I think that was the Forbes year was running and the flat tax. 96, I think Quayle shows up and he was gone, I think, before the Iowa caucus was over. I think that was the end of him. So, but that party has changed so much. So no, just for, you know, kids, sorry, for anyone who I got your hopes up. No, Dick Cheney is indeed still alive. My bad. Happy Halloween. 952-946-6205. So I'm going to put the story out there, cause there's a photo in the story you've got to see. A slithering snake shown in the pictures is safe and sound after Coon Rapids police released it back in the wild. This thing is huge. And you released it back into the wild? Why don't you just lather up the kids of Coon Rapids with barbecue sauce at this point? Massive snake. They found it in a public space on Tuesday because, you're going to release the snake back in the wild because Lord knows they're not going to go back into a public space again. What are you doing? I'm not saying kill the thing, but, this is a big snake, man. Have you seen the pictures of the snake?
I'll have to Google a picture of this here.
Bring me the news.com.
Okay.
Bring me the news.com. It's huge! Conservation officer who captured the snake posted on the social media saying 99% of the time being a conservation officer can get you help very cute critters, while the other 1% of the time we don't even try to think about. The limbless reptile, Dick Cheney, I don't think it's a snake. Do you really have to put limbless in there? I think we all understand what a snake is. Is that one of those snakes with arms? No, they don't have arms. They're a snake.
I want to break a bone on a snake. Yeah.
The limbless reptile is now roaming free in Bunker Park. What are you doing? What are you doing? The snake is going to kill us all. Well, can we get one of the roving gangs of turkeys up there? They'll keep us safe. I got to imagine the turkeys are not going to have anything of a snake coming into their territory.
Send Yogi up there with his gun, too.
Get the bear with the bear packing heat, the turkey gang turkeys. Anyone else we can send in there? What are those flying carps out of the river? We'll get them right next to the river. Flying carp will take them out. Bull snake is our victor here. That's our category. Also known as gopher snakes, are commonly found in counties along the Minnesota, Mississippi, and St. Croix Rivers. According to the DNR, adult bull snakes average 37 to 72 inches in length, with the state record coming in at a whopping 100 inches. That's more than 8 feet long. Hello, ladies. Bull snakes are non-venomous and are really good at hunting rodents. Well, this snake, have you seen the photo yet of this snake?
He's a big guy.
He's not a small little fella, limbless or not. Why would you release that back in Bunker Park?
These are a little bit bigger than the ones we have here at the station.
Okay, yeah, because of where we're at, yeah. We're right next to a lake, and next to Bryant Lake, on the Palatial Broadcasting Complex at 212 and Valley View Road. And because of where we're at, there are snakes, garter snakes. There's a lot of garter snakes because it's a swamp area. And so we get a lot of garter snakes. But they're only like a foot long. Still
if
creepy.
That,
yeah, they're kind of creepy. But, yeah, we get tiny little ones there.
If we get this guy in here, I'd be a little nervous.
You released it back into a park. Good luck tomorrow. Are there any children missing? Is there a snake with a child-shaped in its center right now in Coon Rapids? I kudos to the conservation officer. And heck, I love nature. I love conservation. I love the fact that we do this. But that's a big honking snake. How venomous are bull snakes? Do we know? Are they non-venomous? What did she say here?
It says at the bottom, non-venomous.
Non-venomous. Yeah. Good to know beforehand.
But they are, is according to the article, really good at hunting rodents.
Good, yeah, that's good. So, kids, I know what Halloween costume you should not be wearing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Why did you have to tell us? I don't think you had to tell us that he didn't. Yeah, I don't think you had to tell us that. In news stories, by the way, Jack Rice is going to join us here. A bevy of legal matters that have come up that we are going to touch base with him. That's going to be here in just about 10 minutes, a little less than 10 minutes. Representative John Thompson, DFL in St. Paul, whose public controversies have created a series of political headaches for the DFL, was expelled from the House DFL caucus on Tuesday, according to a statement from House Speaker Melissa Hortman and Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. Representative Thompson's actions, credible reports of abuse and misconduct, and has failed to take responsibility and remain unacceptable for a member of the Minnesota House of Representatives, the joint statement said. It would be best for Representative Thompson, his family, and the institution for him to resign. In the absence of a resignation, the Minnesota House DFL has voted to remove Representative Thompson from the caucus. Although a pariah among his Democratic colleagues, Thompson remains a representative in the Minnesota House, which has never expelled a member. Removal from the House requires a two-thirds vote in the entire chamber. A Ramsey County court this week. By the way, that does. I would find it be interesting if they actually brought him up to be expelled. Would the Republicans vote to do it? Because I think that the Republicans enjoy having Thompson there and want to have him there as long as they can. So I almost wonder if the Republicans, because it's not a seat the Republicans are going to pick up in a special election. I almost kind of wonder if the Republicans would basically say, no, he's your mess. You get to keep him. A Ramsey County court this week asked the state of Minnesota to take Thompson's license for failing to pay a fine resulting from the July 4th traffic violation. He's found guilty by a Hennepin County jury in July of disorderly conduct stemming from an incident at North Memorial Health in 2019. Fox 9 reported in July that between 2003 and 2009, police reports revealed allegations that he punched, hit, choked a woman, including in front of children, although he was never ultimately charged with those crimes. Thompson published a lengthy statement to his Facebook page on Tuesday, which says, in part, that allegations about something that allegedly happened to me 20 years ago does not disqualify me from doing my job today. As a matter of fact, it only gave me strength to fight harder and help transform the community I am fighting for. I'm going to stop you right there, okay? I backed up Thompson when he said, I feel like I'm being racially profiled, when he was stopped by the St. Paul cop, because in this city, in this state, I think we have learned that the black population has been telling us the truth about how they get treated, and we are now seeing what happens. And so it is not my place as a white guy to sit there and tell a black guy whether or not they're being racially profiled. I think the evidence weighs pretty clearly that an African-American man getting pulled over by a cop can very easily feel as if they're being racially profiled. And reality is, I think more cases than that, they are being racially profiled. I think that that's the case. I still stand by that. That being said, there was the mess with his driver's license. There's the mess with when he was married. There's the mess here. How do you not have paid this fine? Okay, how do you not? I mean, you get the ticket. How do you not have paid this fine? I will bring up the question, because there is a question of where he lives. Did they send the fine to your St. Paul address and you're not living there? Is that what happened? I'm asking the question, because it blows my mind. If you've had the amount of problems that you have had, and the amount of questionable behavior that have been alleged against you, that something as easy as a slam dunk at paying a parking ticket or a speeding ticket should be done. And it's not, you know, that should be easy enough for you. It really should. And it doesn't sound like you're contesting the ticket. It just sounds like you just didn't want to pay it. So here you are once again, now back in the headlines for another unfortunate reason, that the Ramsey County Court this week has said that, you know, that this is, you know, you have, you know, that they want to take your recently minted license for a Minnesota address away from you. And once again, you were found guilty in July by a Hennepin County jury for disorderly conduct from an incident in North Memorial Health. That's not 20 years ago. That's July. This week is when the Ramsey County Court chimed in. That's not 20 years ago. Of course, he had he went to the suburb of Hugo, home of Minneapolis Police Union leader, former Minneapolis Police Union leader Bob Kroll, and his wife, WCCO reporter Liz Collins, for a Black Lives Matter protest, and said, you know, some inappropriate things there. Thompson's Facebook statement acknowledges mistakes. I have made some bad decisions in the past. Yes, I've been through a storm and back. Yes. Am I a passionate and vocal black man? Yes. Thompson's political activism was catalyzed by the police killing of his friend Philando Castile, who was shot in the summer of 2016 by a St. Anthony police officer who was acquitted of wrongdoing. He says his wife encouraged him to start seeing a culturally intelligent male mental health specialist in 2016, an incredibly difficult year for him. In addition to Castile's killing, Thompson's mom died and his son was shot in the crossfire of gang violence. Thompson wrote that his family has sought mental help for their children because of the slander that they see about us in the media. Lays found into trouble when Thompson began in the wake of July 4th traffic stop when he showed a Wisconsin driver's license, which raised questions about his residency. He's accused of officers stopped him of racially profiling him. He said in the Facebook post that he has Minnesota's driver's license now. Well, he might not have it for too long. All right. Once again, I want to make sure I'm very clear here. I'm not going to question whether or not Thompson has the right to feel like he's being racially profiled when a police officer stops him. I think, for God's sakes, it's one of the things I've learned is that I think your fear and your concern about that is very much justified, absolutely, in the city of Minneapolis, without a doubt. That being said, it's clear, Representative, you have some issues here. You have as well. A lot of Republicans and a lot of Republican-leading media, looking at you, Star Tribune, who desperately want to shine the spotlight on you as you go through this. You're clearly a very passionate man. You've got some ideas that you want to bring forward. I get that. I think, though, trying to work through personal issues while spotlights are being shown on you never really works out. I have yet to see anyone be able to figure out their personal issues with that much media attention clamoring at the door. My suggestion, for what it's worth, is resign your position, get all the stuff that you need to get fixed, and by all means, run again in a future race. If you feel as if you've gotten things set up, you've got your feet underneath you, by all means, run again. But the fact that you haven't paid this ticket, you got some things out there. And my suggestion, it's just my suggestion, grain of salt. My suggestion, you might want to get that stuff figured out, not as a representative, not in the spotlight of St. Paul politics, not in the spotlight of Republicans desperately trying to find something that they can run against every Democrat in the state on. Because the reality is you're not going to solve your problems, and you're basically just going to end up having more problems because the spotlight glares so brightly. So, please, my suggestion, for what it's worth. All right? 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Jack Rice, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jack Rice is our legal expert, and it's always great to chat with him when we have a lot of legal news coming up, and we have a bevy of it right now. JackRiceLaw.com. That's Jack Rice Law, the best dang defense attorney in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, my friend.
It's great to be with you again, Matt.
Thank you very much. Let's start off with the big story. The Minnesota Supreme Court ruled to overturn the third-degree murder conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Muhammad Noor. This is in the shooting death of Justine Dumond. Basically, it comes down to a single word in this case where arguing that the third-degree murder statute did not fit the crime because in the way the statute is written, it says act eminently dangerous to others. And so basically, because it was only one person was targeted, that third degree murder doesn't apply. Am I correct in understanding their ruling here?
Yeah, you are. I mean, realize when we look back at this and when the Court of Appeals came down and said, yes, this third degree applies to Muhammad Noor. Thing is that I was doing media all over the world. And so, I mean, in Asia, in Japan, Australia, Africa, South America. And the thing is I was having to try to explain this distinction. The problem is you can't, because the statute says essentially what a third degree murder is. This is, it's if I shot into a group of people trying to kill somebody and I inadvertently kill another person, that's third degree murder. The idea is I was doing something so imminently dangerous that it was foreseeable, but I didn't kill the person I was trying to kill. I killed somebody else. That's what it means. And the statute says another, which means it's not the person you were trying to kill, because if it were, then it would be a second-degree murder charge. That's the reason the Supreme Court said the Court of Appeals is wrong. That's the reason that that conviction was overturned on the Muhammad Noor case.
How much of his sentence was based, his what he was sentenced to was based off the third-degree murder charge? Do you know?
This is a new sentence. Okay. Understand, what's going to happen is he is going to have a new sentencing date. If we look at the sentencing guidelines in Minnesota, and this is just for all of your listeners, there's two things that you look at. You look at their prior record, and so you'll get points for the number of convictions that you have. Muhammad Noor had no points at all. So it's based upon the charge itself. A third-degree murder conviction comes with a presumptive 150 months to serve. In fact, that was the sentence that Muhammad Noor actually received, was 150 months. Now, this is why it's significant, is the manslaughter charge comes with a presumptive 48 months to serve. So the difference is dramatic. And in fact, if you realize with good time, Muhammad Noor is very close to being released from prison right now.
Obviously, there's also implications here in the George Floyd death, because if another person had to be involved and be threatened by this, then the reality is any third-degree charges against either Chauvin or any of the other officers is not going to fly, because once again, it's you have to have multiple people being threatened, correct?
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's the other piece of this, right, is that these third-degree murder convictions – that came down against Derek Chauvin are going to be out. They're gone. Now it's not going to matter as much in his case because he was found guilty of that second degree charge, which actually is a higher number, a more substantial number. And it's the third degree, which I don't want to say it was a lesser included because it's slightly different, but it's less serious than the second degree intentional. So this is much different than we have in the Noor case. But I think it really highlights just how the Court of Appeals got this wrong. And they really did, by the way. They really got this wrong. The Supremes actually came out, and they did the right thing in this case.
And obviously, and once again, I should mention that the four officers also are going to face federal charges. So I imagine they're going to avoid that pitfall as far as the charges in those cases. But it does bring up the other question here. Moving away from police shootings where people have died, how many times has this third-degree charge been applied to another case where now someone who's convicted and sitting in jail needs a new trial because technically, even though that they might have said there someone might have been injured, unless you can prove there was another individual who is potentially in danger here, that third-degree murder charge is now null and void?
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think that is the difference. I'm not sure how many there really are when it comes to that because truly – I mean, when the conclusion from the district court and then the Court of Appeals, honestly, and if you talk to criminal defense lawyers who walk into courtrooms every day, almost every single person I talked to was scratching their heads. This just didn't make sense to us. And so I don't expect much of that. But I'll tell you what, you did highlight something much bigger, and that's this federal question now. Mm-hmm. Because if you look back and you look back at what happened very early on in the Derek Chauvin case, he had an original lawyer, and that original lawyer was trying to get a resolution in this case. And in fact, the term that we use inside, if you will, is global resolution. What that means is what you're trying to do is not just negotiate a plea agreement on the state case. You're trying to get an agreement on the state case and the federal charges, too. The problem is what Derek Chauvin is facing right now and what those other three are also facing is they're facing federal charges, which are completely separate from the state charges, too. So in other words, what can happen to him, the 22 and a half years or whatever that number it is that Derek Chauvin is going to serve, that is in addition to what he may serve if he's found guilty of those charges. And remember, it's not just the civil rights violations against George Floyd. He has another trial that's out there involving the civil rights violations of a 14-year-old boy that he hit with a flashlight in the head a bunch of times and shouldn't have, allegedly, as well as putting his knee on the neck of that boy, too. Remember, that's one of the reasons that the Department of Justice is actually all over the Minneapolis Police Department right now, because despite what the Minneapolis Police Department is saying, they've got some very serious problems, and it wasn't just a Derek Chauvin issue. There's a whole bunch of problems that they have right now.
Jack Rice, kind enough to join us talking legal issues. JackRiceLaw.com is where you'll find him. Let's talk about the Minneapolis Charter Amendment. Judge Anderson came on down. What I do not understand about this is her first ruling on this case was it was too much description. The second ruling on this case was not enough description. So the city council came out with a mid-ground, and she still has thrown it out. How, and I'm of the mindset that this is the epitome of an activist judge now who just was looking for a reason to throw this thing off the ballot.
Yeah, this is really difficult right now, because when you have a situation like this, remember, I mean, I don't care where you are politically, right? When you look at what judges do, judges have obligations, and those obligations are to apply the law. I understand they could like it, they could hate it. It doesn't matter. They still have to look at what the legislature has presented and what they intended. And so there may be a little bit of wiggle room, but there isn't that much. And so the ability for her to come in and say, this is what I think, and then this is what I think more, or this is what I think differently, it just doesn't hold up. My problem is that this is ripe for going to the Court of Appeals and even potentially to the Supremes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the question I have is this. I mean, we have a ballot question. The law is pretty clear. You get the signatures. The ballot question goes on the ballot. Right. I don't quite understand where in the world the judge or anyone who's trying to overturn this comes up. I mean, it seems pretty airtight here that, okay, well, they did what they needed to do to get this on the ballot, so we really can't get in the way of this.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that really is the issue. In general, what would happen in probably what should have happened was, if you're trying to get this on the ballot and they fulfill all of their obligations, it gets presented, it gets on the ballot. If it passes, then what could happen is you could challenge that issue. You could challenge whether or not it's appropriate, number one, whether or not there was due process in terms of whether a jury actually passed it, or more importantly, whether or not it is appropriate or constitutional and fair, if you will. And so, but that's different than a judge deciding it should say this or it should say that. That's a much dicier situation.
A conspiracy theory that was put forward to me, and I want to get your thoughts on this. They said that the reason Jamie Anderson was appointed by Pawlenty, and there are some questions about the appointment because they did not mention the relationship that her husband had with Pawlenty's administration when they appointed her. That being said, she came in from a Republican governor. But the fact is, her ruling stated that the ballot question can remain on the ballot as of right now. As she said, take it to the Supreme Court. Is this almost an admission by her that she expects this to be overturned and that the Supreme Court will allow the ballot question to stay? And this is either getting off her plate or basically doing what she wants to do as a Republican judge. She did what she could, but she knows that there's a finite amount she could do with that. Do you feel as if there's some validity that the Minnesota Supreme Court's just going to look at this and say, we can't get involved here because they followed the rules?
Well, I mean, at the same time, whether they followed the rules or not, the Supremes do certainly have a role to play in terms of what's being said, because there are still constitutional requirements here. At the same time, I'm not a conspiracy guy. I'm really not. And yet, at the same time, I think that it does seem what she is doing is she really is throwing this into the lap of the Court of Appeals and the Supremes, saying, you know what? Hey. And if you think it's a problem, you think it's a conspiracy, fine, so be it. Then you overturn it, and it's not my problem anymore. And whether or not it was Tim Pawlenty who put her on the bench or whether it was somebody else, I guess I'll defer on that issue. Let's see what happens.
The Supreme Court, by the way, has said they will take up this issue. Chief Justice Gildea has said the attorney is working on all sides of the debate to file informational memoranda by 5 p.m. on Wednesday. So tick-tock goes the clock. So the question here is this, just in your experience, I know legal versus political, how long can the Supreme Court take to rule on this before, even if they are going to rule on the side of the ballot question, it becomes null and void because we're at a point too far into the process?
Right. They're going to move pretty quickly on a case like this because it's dramatic and it's important and they know it. I mean, one of the issues that I think is important is that the Supremes, although they really delayed when it comes to the Noor case, as we talked about, because there was a fight going on with the Derek Chauvin case. I mean, they have to remain not just legitimate, but relevant, right? I mean, this is an issue that really matters to the people of Minnesota, the people of Hennepin County. And so because of that, the city council and what the people of Minneapolis are desperately trying to do is to rework an issue, and they need guidance in terms of making this happen so it actually is valid, so something can actually change. This is how this, the court's supposed to work. So if they don't do what they're supposed to do, what you're going to see is even more people questioning a system, and that's something that the Supremes should not want.
One final case that has come to light. This is the case where some parents were actually suing to have a mask mandate put in all schools. I could already see the trap in this one, and I want to give the judge credit here because, you know, his response is, I mean, I can't legislate from a bench. You know, he can't become an activist, Jeff. I mean, if you're asking for a judge to install something, generally, that's not going to go, especially if it's something that definitely belongs in the legislative or executive process.
No, I think you just absolutely nailed it there. I mean, when we look at where we are and what the role of judges are, it can be frustrating. And I appreciate it, too, because remember, I'm an advocate, right? As a former prosecutor, I was absolutely advocating a particular position. As a criminal defense lawyer, and I've been doing this a very long time, I'm advocating, and I can disagree with judges constantly on this issue. But at the same time, what judges are supposed to do is they're supposed to open up the statute and say, the statute says this. I can think it's great. I can think it's genius. I can think it's stupid. But in the end, my job is to apply it unless there's something about it that is so unusual, so obviously failed, that I have to apply it. Then you take it to the Court of Appeals. So I think the fact that this judge was smart enough to say, you know what, let's face it, I don't have the ability to make that call, is something that is logical. And honestly, if you take a look at what's going on in Florida right now with DeSantis, his decision to do to legislate in the way that he does in his position, one of the things that makes it difficult for a judge is that you have executives who have who recognize that they do have authority and that the judiciary has to acknowledge certain amounts of authority. They may think that what the governor is doing is idiotic, but if they have a certain amount of authority in the constitutional framework of Florida or of Texas, they're sort of stuck. So even if this were a Republican appointed or a Democratic appointed judiciary, it's not really in their position to apply it. It's actually more often in the Court of Appeals and in the Supreme Court who steps in to make that decision.
Well, can I ask something off just off what you just said? Final thing here, if I can. I mean, how much – okay, so – when we look at the culpability of Republicans that might have been involved in 1-6, you know, there comes a point that what they were doing is beyond their job and their requirement. They became reckless. Isn't there, when you look at COVID, when you see some of these politicians out saying vaccines don't work and masks don't work and stuff like this, isn't there become a level of recklessness at some point where a family who might have listened to them, that might have lost a loved one, could come back and file legal actions against that person saying, you know, your recklessness went beyond the cover of your job, that you knew what you were doing and you didn't care about what you were saying because it was going to get people killed. I mean, is there any culpability there?
All I know is this is the Matt McNeil show, and he just asked me the $10 million question.
Yes,
the entire country is fighting right now.
Yes.
So as I sit here trying to thread this needle, thanks a lot, brother.
You're welcome, sir.
Yeah, right. The thing is there's a couple of things. First of all, we know that elected officials have a lot of immunity, which means you can't really sue them for the things that they do unless you could show that they're so far outside of their job description that they're doing things that are beyond reckless. You could say they're doing reckless things, but if it's within the job description, they're probably protected when it comes to that issue. And yet, at the same time, I think where this may come down to, and I know because you can look back some years here in Minnesota where the Attorney General's office was investigating this issue, and I know they were. It was the question of how much authority the government has to enforce vaccines, right? Let's not even look at COVID. Let's take a look at MMR vaccines. Let's take a look at smallpox. Let's take a look at meningitis. Let's take a look at tetanus. Let's look at these other issues and say, if somebody has this, what authority do we have? I mean, if I think back to situations in the past where we were concerned about biological weapons, and one of those fears was that what would happen if you inoculated somebody with something that was deadly? And I think this is a question that the government should be thinking about federally and even within each state, is that if you had a quote unquote terrorist group that decided to inoculate somebody with something that made them essentially a deadly weapon, what authority does the government have to protect its citizenry from that potential threat? And I think that what needs to happen right now is the AG's office here in Minnesota and across the country needs to dig into that issue and say, we must have some authority, and at the federal level too, we must have some authority to say we have an obligation to protect our citizenry and can make decisions. Because if you follow what Texas and Florida is saying right now and a whole bunch of Republican governors, then that tells me that if I have a deadly disease and my job is to roll into American society and spread it to everybody, there is nobody who can stop me. Mm-hmm. I can do whatever I want. And that just doesn't make sense. See what I mean?
No, it does. And you know, there are some states where that if you have something like measles or something like this, and you knowingly have a sick kid and you bring him into a school, you can be held culpable. There are some states that have rules in the books, but it doesn't seem – it's very unclear about the length and how deep you can go into that argument as far culpability.
I can give you one right now. Huh? I can give you here in Minnesota, there is a law in Minnesota as it applies to sexually transmitted diseases. And the idea is that if you don't share with a partner that you have a disease and spread that disease, then you can be held criminally liable for it. And so the idea is that if you have something and you choose to go out and spread it, is it the same thing? And if it is the same thing, can you apply it in the same way? If we're arguing that it's constitutional that you can have on the books that I can't give somebody purposely, just I'm picking one, syphilis. If I can't do that, that means that there can be a law on the books that says that I can't pass COVID if I know it. Tell me why that's different. So there's a question. I'm trying to thread a needle. That's all I'm trying to do, because you're making this impossible for me.
Well, I want to give you credit. You actually did a very good job there. That's an absolutely outstanding answer. Because, you know, there is a lot of questions there. If you are in need of a fantastic defense lawyer, Jack Rice is the one I'll send you to every single time. That is, he's just great. JackRiceLaw.com. If you have a question, get in touch with him. He's ready to listen to you. JackRiceLaw.com. Jack, you are always welcome back on the show. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Always. Thank you, Matt.
Take care. We'll spotlight that one for sure. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much, Todd Colet, for sponsoring AM 950 this week. You can, too, if you'd like to. You're more than welcome to. You can go over to am950radio.com, find out more information, or just call 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Todd lives in Spain, so he can't really support us by going to our local sponsors, so he sponsors the station. His band, Just Folk, has a brand new song out, Is It Monday? It's up on YouTube. I'll put the link out there a little bit later on, and enjoy that. Then give it a click, by all means, please, and pay attention to that. That is a good song. 952-946-6205. A lot to unpack with Jack's visit. Really, because three major cases, two major cases and one lesser case. The one with the school mask, like I said, that was the trap I saw, is that if you start asking the courts to write laws, they generally are not going to do that. And so, as a matter of fact, I mean, it's interesting when you put that case in contrast with what Judge Anderson did with the Minneapolis ballot. On one case, you have the judge saying, I can't write laws from the bench. In the case of Anderson, it almost seems like she's trying to write laws from the bench. She's trying to undo this. And the way the law is said is that if they get the signatures, they get the question, they can get the question on the ballot. And you saying, well, it's not defined enough to my liking, that's really irrelevant to my knowledge. And the system's played the game here, but now the Supreme Court's going to take it into account. And I don't know. I can't see the Supreme Court coming back and not putting the ballot initiative back on the ballot. And I think there is some validity to Anderson leaving the ballot question on the ballot, not ordering the ballots to be destroyed and wait until the Supreme Court weighs in. I think that might almost be, to a point, an admission that this could be overturned. But you know, when you look at the Supreme Court, and I'll get to the Noor case in a second, they have a very – they look at laws very literally. What does the law say? And so the question then comes in is that the – you know, whether or not they'll come in and they'll say, well, did the people who passed the ballot get the ballot? Yep. You know, what's the wording on the question? Well, I imagine it's played out. But if it's not played out, if they got the signatures to put the ballot question on the ballot, how do you sit there and say, well, it's not worded correctly enough, we're going to negate it? I'm going to be surprised if the Supreme Court doesn't rule the ballot question stays. It'll be interesting. I don't think it will be a unanimous ruling, though. I'll say that. Back to the Noor ruling. What I think this is once again, it's a Hail Mary, but it was designed. I think what you're looking at is that the people who are defending of police and police actions have basically thrown third degree murder under the bus as a charge to be used. And I don't say that lightly. I think that, you know, and I brought this up with Jack. I have a feeling any third-degree murder conviction in this state is about to get reviewed, and that there, unless there was definitively a second person, another person who was threatened by the actions of the individual convicted under third degree, well, those cases are all going to get thrown out. And it might have been a case where they didn't charge him correctly. It might have been a case where it was trumped-up charges. We're going to find out. But what they did is they said, and they pointed it out, well, the law says there has to be more than one person threatened for this to a charge to apply. Well, it's going, and I guarantee you, any person charged with that from here on out is going to immediately say, well, if there's only one person threatened, you can't charge them with that. So we'll have to see how the long-term impacts of that across the board. Speaking of court cases, our final story today, a Minnesota man who boasted about assaulting police officers at the January 6th Capitol riot represented himself at a hearing on Tuesday. And it didn't go well. He's asserting that he's languishing in jail and wants a new detention hearing. Nobody wants to sit in a jail longer than they need to, said Brian Mock, M-O-C-K, who told the U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, I never should have been here in the first place. Au contraire, if you did attack the democracy that is this country, yeah, you did. Was this the guy from up north of us? Was this the guy who's just up on US 8, one of the towns up on US 8, Lindstrom or something like that? I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember
where it was. Mock, 42, was prepared to die and leave his four children behind when he and his girlfriend boarded a flight to Washington in early January. I went to the Capitol not knowing what to expect, but said goodbye to my four children, not sure if I was going to come home. I was at peace with that knowledge, Mock wrote on Facebook. I held my own, and then some of when I watched Capitol Police beating women and old men, when faced with real men, free men, brave men, they fled in fear with tears in their eyes. Yeah, this guy, this gem. Yeah. While at the Capitol, Mock shoved a police officer to the ground, aggressively yelled, "Get out, go!" to the officers, and then shoved another officer to the ground, who later said that the fall caused him excruciating pain. Mock then picked up a riot shield that officers were using and passed them back to members of the crowd. So he stole something. Tear gas 6 times, pepper sprayed, and mustard gassed. In the end, Mock's girlfriend wrote on Facebook, "But we stayed true to being patriots. Patriots who are now having a little cry party because I don't want to be in jail." Poor little old boo-boo kitty. Boo-boo kitty, are you okay? It sounds like you're a little wuss balls now. When you don't have your mob to defend you, you kind of, we're victims. Shut up. We stayed to being true to being patriots, marched into the Capitol, and stormed the front line. No regrets, ashamed of the blue that had harmed everyone there to stand for the cause. I'm not. Hey, by the way, Ashley Babbitt, she got what she deserved. She did. She absolutely did. That treasonous hag, she was storming the U.S. House. She was dropped like a fly. I've said before, I was U.S. Army. If I was on a guard post and I was defending the third most powerful person in the United States government and someone was breaking a window and trying to storm through, if I was on guard duty, I would have dropped her too. Would have dropped her too, without a doubt. Several tipsters turned Mock and his girlfriend in after they bragged about their stuff on Facebook. He is at home bragging about beating up cops and destroying property, one of them told the FBI. Another told an agent that Mock bragged that he beat the blank out of a police officer. Just a delightful individual. Mock's history combined with the present offense shows that he's willing to shove just about anyone within a wide range of people who fall behind complete strangers and federal law enforcement officers, prosecutors wrote in the complaint against Mock, referencing to a 2010 incident in which Mock held a gun to three kids' heads and aggressively shouted at them, then shoved a bystander who tried to help. Yeah, he sounds like a freaking delight. You're just...
You have that in addition to what he did on January 6th. This guy clearly has some issues.
Who could have seen that this guy was a loon ball? Oh, all of us. He also threatened his girlfriend to make her life hell if she identified him to the police, prosecutor said. Happy holidays. Valentine's Day is going to be so romantic for him.
He's going to have some trouble on some of those Tinder dating apps, yeah. I think. A lot of left swipes.
Yeah. In June, Boasberg ordered Mock to be detained pending trial. Now Mock claims he hasn't been properly represented by his public defender, and he's been unable to review discovery due to jail issues, a backlog that's been complained about by several other defendants waiting for their trial from Washington jail cells. Right now, I don't think I've been defended the way I've been asked to be defended, Mock said. I'm the victim! I've been in here almost 100 days. Hey, 1,000 will be a nice start. Personally, I would love to see you in there for 50,000 days, sir. How dare you, you traitor to America. How dare you? Lock him up. Anyway, going back to the story, and that's just my personal feeling about the whole thing, as a veteran of the U.S. Army. I'd like a fair detention to bring forward the evidence that I have. I'm more than happy to represent myself. Boasberg reminded Mock multiple times that he couldn't have a second detention hearing, but could file a motion for a bond review, something that a lawyer would have told him he advised Mock against representing himself. Mock, who also claimed he's found preliminary evidence of FBI misconduct and conspiracy, he's excited to bring it to court when he gets more. I found flat-out lies, fraud, Mock told Boasberg. At this point, I can't prove all of it. It's not just me being crazy, not just me being some extremist.
At this point, I can't prove
can't prove my defense at all, but hey, you know what? I'm not guilty.
Believe me.
Just trust me. Mock will join a growing number of defendants who participated in the Capitol riot who are unhappy with their public defenders and want to represent themselves. Boasberg scheduled a hearing next week to talk about whether Mock needs a new lawyer or can represent himself. Later on Tuesday, Andrew Haitley pleaded guilty to one count of parading, demonstrating, and picketing. He's a 34-year-old trucker from South Carolina. Dude, your whole life has been a series of bad choices. Let's just be honest about this. And you basically thinking you can represent yourself in federal court when you don't even understand the process seems pretty on brand for you at this point, Mock. Yes, we're going to mock you. You fool. You shoved cops. You stole a police shield. Don't act like what you did was brave. You're a traitor to America. And personally, if found guilty of the allegations against you, I hope they lock you up and we never see you again because you're a pretty horrible human being. You're a horrible human being. So, no, defend yourself in court. Good luck. All our best. Bon voyage. Native Roots Radio, Robert and pilot and crew, they're up next. You have a good one. We are back on a Thursday. Till then, see ya.